Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. This is your host, Vinny, along with my co-host, Mike. How are you, Mike? I don't hear you, Mike. Well, anyway, we are set. We are looking forward to a really good show tonight. How could it not be a good show tonight when we're talking about the Mets being in, not only in first place, but they've got 8 wins in a row. They're 10-3. Mike, you there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm here.
There you are. So anyway, Mike, welcome. You're looking forward to the show. It's going to be a great show. We've got the first place 10-3 Mets, 8 in a row. After everything we talked about all offseason, here we are, which is great. Now, of course, being the Mets, we do have some stuff to talk about that won't be as happy and peppy as we want to be, considering the space that they're in the standings. But overall, this start for the Mets, Mike, we were talking a lot this winter. We didn't see this coming.
No, this is I do want to remind you that when we closed the last show, I said I was looking forward to tonight's podcast when we could speak about the first place Mets. So, a little prophecy there right at the end. So anybody that listened for the whole hour.
You do have a little Nostradamus thing going on there. I got to give you a little bit of credit. I guess you have to start out, Mike. We do have to, there's other things to talk about, such as injuries and all that jazz. First and foremost, the way that this team is playing out of the gate, we talked about the really necessity almost for this team to start out strong with the expectations, with the schedule, for a lot of reasons, psychological. And they came out, I would say, better than we even expected. And it's not just the wins and losses. I mean, the pitching has been, if you can even say better than advertised, it's even been better than advertised. And they actually are hitting the ball, which is the surprise.
I think when we discussed in the offseason, the formula, so to speak, for this particular Mets team to be successful, the pitching, we said, it couldn't be, good. It had to be outstanding. And it has been. It has been outstanding. And if your pitching is that good, you're just going to win a lot of games. I mean, you get to the DeGrom and Harvey are such shutdown right now that I don't know about you, but on Friday night when they won, I was already sitting there going, hey, we're going to win 8 in a row. You're starting to feel now like DeGrom and Harvey are automatic.
It's funny because you were almost, it's crazy, Mike, considering where we've been the past, 7 years here. But I was almost thinking, gee, I'm going to be disappointed if we don't win these next 2 in a row. Not getting the 4-game sweep at that point, I felt would have been a letdown. How nuts is that?
Yeah, it's a good kind of crazy, though.
Absolutely. I mean, and the flip side of the coin, besides all the wins, they've had 6 home games, right? No, actually, I think it's 7 home games, right? 7 home games. And out of the 7 home games, you've had 5 of the 7 having 38,000 and above crowds. Now, the Mets were smart. That's not just by luck. It was by design. They made sure that besides opening day, they got 2 Harvey games out of it. They had a Harvey T-shirt giveaway. They had the fireworks night. Like, they really jam-packed this thing to try to get big crowds. But they have big crowds who are very into it. I mean, there's a different feel at the stadium. I was at the game yesterday with you. We were there. And, my son says to me, this doesn't feel like a regular season game in April. He's right. It didn't feel like it. There really is such a different vibe on the field, in the stands. It really is a great time for the Mets. And it's, to come out of the gate like this, you couldn't ask for more, Mike.
Well, In a lot of times, in a negative way, that we've used the words "big market" a lot in the last couple of years when we've gotten upset about, you know, some of us about lack of payroll spending and stuff like that. And we'll talk about, but this is a big market. This is a big market, and you kind of see what that means. You know, you're talking about New York. You have 20 million people in the metropolitan area. As soon as the team starts to give fans a reason to show in this area, you're drawing on a lot of people. Yesterday, if it wasn't sellout, it had to be really close. I didn't check the box score, but I was sitting there. I know you were too, and it was really crowded there. And there was no real huge promotion. I think people came out yesterday for Matt Harvey in baseball, and so there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of baseball fans in New York. If you give a good product, that, you know, people forget, you know, how great our attendance numbers were in years like 2007, 2008.
Well, you're right. You're right. Now, again, we do have to say, you know, there was a feeling yesterday when they rallied, took the lead, and they were down 1-0, no hits through the first three innings, and they erupted for 7 runs. In the fourth, and that was when you really were starting to feel, wow, this is like the greatest run we're having. Enjoy this moment. And, you know, we did get a little rain on our parade, you know, 2 doses of rain. When we had the 2 fractured limbs, you had Darnell get hit by, actually, first, you had Blevins get hit with a comeback. He ended up fracturing his forearm of his pitching arm. And then you had in the bottom of that inning, you had Darnell get hit by a pitch. It turns out he broke a bone, I guess, in his hand, right hand. So that took a little bit of wind out of the sails. I'm going to give you my reasons why I don't think it should take all the wind out, but took wind out of the sails, you know, two, you know, kind of big losses. Both guys had been off to great starts. Darnell was leading the team with 10 RBIs. Blevins, I believe I could be off, Mike, but I think he retired all 15 batters he faced this year or something nuts like that. So it's, you know, right away, it's kind of a little bit of, gee, why can't we have nice things mentality. Take a little bit of wind out of the sails. But you know what? Yes, it's a loss. Blevins is supposed to be out about 6 weeks. I would bet it's a little more. And Darnell, I guess, is 3 weeks, probably a little more, is what the estimates are today. I don't believe any of those. And we've been watching this team too long, Mike. Have they ever been with even remotely close on their estimates? No, no, no. So let's say
day to day, then the DL, then the out for the year. So we'll watch that close.
So let's say for a minute that Blevins is 8 weeks and Darnell is 4 weeks, just to throw out some guesstimates. You know, look, yes, it's a loss. The bullpen has been as good as the Mets have been. The bullpen the last, you know, 4 games or so has not been lights out. And Blevins has been the best thing in that bullpen, the most lights out. So it's a loss. But again, I think that they'll be able to cover it with mixing and matching of guys. And Darnell, you know, they called up Kevin Plawecki, but it, to me, Mike, it's more than about Plawecki filling in. You know, the Mets are 10-3, and Daniel Murphy's batting, I believe, 156, and Curtis Granderson is batting about 146. So those two guys, they're not going to bat that, the, you know, there's not going to be another month where these guys are going to be batting in the 140s, 150s. You would have to expect that the Darnell's early season production is going to be made up by guys like that more than by Plawecki. Plawecki just has to be average to be okay if the rest of the guys step up. That's my take, Mike.
Hey, look, the most critical person they've lost of all these players is Wright. And the team has responded, you know, very well to that. I don't know if they've lost since David went on the disabled list. And hopefully he's not going to be out that long. I mean, the initial estimates were about 3 weeks, of which about a week of that has already been, you know, lived through. And you get David back, you know, Darnell was one of the people picking up the team during that absence. If you can just hang in there till David gets back, I think Plawecki, like you say, he doesn't have to be great. You slide right back into that two-hole that Darnell was filling for him. And, you know, you're back in somewhat business. And look, if they're going to be good, they're going to have to withstand injuries. That's part of the deal. It's a long season. It's 162 games. We're getting our share of injuries now. Chances are, as the season goes on, everybody will have their share. And, you know, they just have to get through this. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about David Wright because, you know, you're right. That's the biggest loss on the team right now. But, you know, right, he's been out four games. They won all four.
Right.
The estimate machine for him said 3 weeks. Again, I still think that means it's probably more like four best case, probably more like five or six. You know, so you're talking about we should expect that he's going to be out probably another month, that he's going to come back end of May is probably the estimate. You know, they should be able to, like I said, by having guys step up like the Murphys and the Grandersons who are, you know, at numbers right now that they cannot sustain on the negative side, that you should see an uptick in production that could help fill that gap. Are we going to go 10-3 in the next 13 games? I don't think that's reasonable to expect. But you're 7 games over 500 now. If you're 500 the next month and you're 7 games over 500 at the end of May, I'll take that, Mike.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think that the guy to watch right now is Blevins because, as you mentioned, the bullpen was already showing some signs of shakiness, and that bullpen's taken a lot of hits. You know, he was edging before the season started, which is why, you know, Blevins was traded for in the first place. We haven't talked about Mejia, right? I mean, he's gone for a good long time with what happened there. Black now looks like, you know, we might not see him. You know, he was in the original plan. So the bullpen's taking a lot of hits. And, you know, a guy like Buddy Carlisle that on our last podcast we thought was getting cut is, you know, being used in eighth inning roles right now. So hopefully they can find some arms for that bullpen because as the season goes on, we know it's really hard to win in the current, you know, the current major leagues without a strong bullpen. You know, it's usually part of the formula. Carnell will be back soon, and we'll see what happens.
And, Mike, we spent part of the offseason, you know, throwing a little bit of dust at Sandy for not making moves. And what is he doing with all these guys, with all this depth? And why is he not trading a G and a Montero? And, you know, we gave him some grief over that. But right now, the fact that you have that kind of depth, it really comes in handy. I mean, look, you know, guys that we wouldn't even consider options, you know, somebody like Hansel Robles is now part of the bullpen, and Goodell. I mean, it's the depth that's there. Guys, we would say, why are you even holding on to these guys? You should trade them away for anything, you know, to fill some major league holes. Well, now they're going to be the ones filling the major league holes. And we're going to see if Sandy is smarter than we gave him credit for. If these guys come through, it shows that the depth approach had some merit.
Did the guy that – I'm going to tell you why, too, and you're going to think I'm joking. I'm actually serious. The guy that I'm optimistic is going to step up and really help now is Alex Torres. And the reason I believe that is because he struggled – you know, he was struggling some earlier in the year. It's all about the hat. And I think now he's got the hat. And I'm actually serious because if you're so worried about getting hit with a ball, and I'm not, look, you know, and I'm saying this as someone who would be pretty worried about getting hit with a ball if I was on the mound. So I'm not saying it to make fun of for Alex. That's what I'm saying. He needs the hat to be effective. And they finally got he can at least face two batters since he got the hat. He got them out. I'm telling you, he's going to step up now. He's got the hat.
Hey, look, he was a guy who, when we got him, you know, people didn't know what to make of him. And then, you know, they said about his control issues, and he's got a lot of walk numbers the last year or two. But you know what? Like, with the hat, the last two games with the hat, he got a save, his first career save. And then yesterday he got a key strikeout to end an inning. You know, if he does step up and become a piece in that bullpen. Remember, you do have Carlisle, we have Familia, we have other guys. We're not asking him to take the eighth inning. We got Carlos Torres asterisk until his arm falls off, which that's gonna happen one day. You know, he could be a key piece. I completely agree with you, Mike. Mike, now it's time. We have our very special guest with us today. We have Steve Keen from the Eddie Cleanpool Society. I know he's one of your favorites, Mike.
A big favorite of mine. So happy to have him on tonight. I over 10 years, well over 10 years, I read his blog, The Crane Pool Society. Just a fabulous, you know, knowledge of the Mets Steve has. And so the first thing, Steve, before we dive into the season, is I do want to ask, are you in semi-retirement from blogging? Because I haven't seen anything from January, since January from you.
Yeah, I am, kind of.
Yeah, I am,
you know,
too.
It's funny. When real life takes over from the real life being the R-E-A-L life to your R-E-E-L life, it's a little, because I have a little more responsibilities at work, and that's what pays the bills around here, keeps the lights on and food on the table. So I really never had time to, you know, start doing stuff. And, you know, I may get back into it again. I hope to add a few things. I've been doing mostly the podcast with the Cult of Mets personalities, with Nick Kalaitis, Gene Anthony, Dave Singer, Matt Faz.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing that. And, you know, and I'm on Twitter all the time because I'm running all kinds of computer and stuff. So I always have a purse, a PC, or I have my phone or my iPad out there with my stuff on it. So
I see I see your tweets going all the time, Steve.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, by the time I get up at 5 in the morning, I don't get back home here now till about 8 o'clock. So I just barely have time now to get in, sit down, eat, and watch the match.
Isn't that working for a living? It really is overrated.
Oh,
but
I'm telling you. It's like, you know, I told my wife, I said, I have to do at least 6 more years. It's the only thing I'm too young to do. It's everything else I'm done, but that's I'm too young to retire.
Well, apologies. So to jump to the Mets, to a more positive thing, I guess, than your terrible work hours. You've got to be happy, Steve. What do you think at this beginning of the season?
I'm ecstatic. I'm very happy. I thought they would be better. I thought that another year with a lot of these younger guys, with Harvey coming back, I thought they'd be better. But it's not just that they're better. There's a whole different attitude. This is something I've been dying for this for years. It's, you know, I haven't seen it, and now I'm seeing it now. This is a team that actually, not only do they believe that they're good, they believe they're better than anybody else, I think, right now. They have so much confidence. And I was when I saw Terry Collins on the postgame show yesterday, he mentioned how in the eighth inning, word was going through the dugout that Darnold and Blevins were both going to be out with Darnold with the broken wrist and the broken forearm for Blevins. And he said you could see a couple of heads, you know, heads start hanging, and it got awful quiet. And the same thing happened when Wright went down. But, you know, Michael Kadaya has become a leader on this team. You have veteran guys now. You have Kadaya. You have Granderson. You have guys who will rally a team around. And a lot of these other guys have now become, you know, younger veterans. I mean, Lucas Duda, he's gone from a guy who was as shy as anything to now a guy who knows that he belongs in the big leagues. Juan Lagares definitely knows he belongs here with his gold glove. And, you know, and we're starting to see Flores is starting to get comfortable. Murphy has got to step up right now. Murphy and Granderson have got to step up offensively. And because I'm telling you, if guys don't step up, they're not going to be here. I think Alderson has, you know, he knows that this is, I have to win, and I have to win now. And, you know, Murphy's got to look behind him because there's a second baseman, you know, up and down in this organization. He's better start hitting, or else he may find himself someplace else. And, you know, we'll see, you know, we might see Flores shooting over to second base and then getting a shortstop. I mean, I think you're going to see there's no more patience with this team, and that's what I like. They're not patient anymore. It's like, this is it. We're living in the now, and, you know, these injuries have really hurt, but they have to have that mentality. I always say, like the New England Patriots, next man up. You know, don't talk, you know, you talked about yesterday, we know these guys are going to be out about 6 to 8 weeks with these injuries. I don't want to hear about them anymore. It sounds bad. It sounds like, you know, harsh, but that's how you win. Say, listen, get better. You can sit on the bench and cheer for us. But if these reporters start at, because the Met beat writers are probably some of the worst beat writers in baseball, and probably in any sport, because they don't come up with an original question. You go and watch them in a pre and post game press conference, and they just ask the same question every time you go there. You know, and I know they're going to keep asking, how was Dono? How was it? And, you know, Collins just has to tell him, look, next question, let's move on. You know, it's hard, it's harsh, but listen, this is professional sports. This is not the Little League. We're not going to send them a basket of bubble gum and candy bars. You know, then we got to move on. Next guy up, let's go.
No, I agree with that. And I'll tell you, the one thing that has been promising all season, I guess from right before the beginning of the season, is you used a phrase a few seconds ago that they're finally living in the now. And, I mean, part of winning is that you got to try to win. And there was just this mentality that you felt was going on, you know, for the last few years that they really – you know, they rather win, and they weren't like tanking. You know, there's no draft pick type of situation like that in baseball, but there's no way the organization was all in. And so, you know, some of the things we saw, the Torres and Blevins trades were clearly more about now, and even bringing up Plawicki. I mean, even a year ago, I would have been concerned that the move would have been like, you know, no, we're not going to bring him up because we're going to wait till July, you know. Super 2 and all that. So it's promising to finally feel as a fan like there's a real emphasis on the season that we're watching.
Oh, yeah. There's no, you know, it's the same thing with Syndergaard. Everybody's screaming for Syndergaard. Syndergaard is not ready. If Syndergaard was doing what Harvey was doing when he was at Vegas and Buffalo, he'd be up here right now. And Dillon Gee would be designated for assignment. You know, it's the same way we're looking how what they did with Montero. They sent Montero to Las Vegas to stretch him out, and they're going to go one time around with a six-man rotation. Dillon Gee has like two starts left to show that he belongs here, because if he can't pitch, he's got to go. Whether you designate him for assignment, whether you get a C-level prospect for him, he's going to go. He's not staying here. If you don't produce, you're going to go. And that's why I put a lot of emphasis on Murphy. Murphy's got to start hitting. If he wants to stay here, which I doubt seriously if he'll be back here next year, even if like something miraculous happened, like they won a World Series, he's still not coming back here next year. Play for a contract. So he's got to step up his game. I mean, I've seen enough of him. His baseball IQ is like zero. It's like he doesn't know how to run bases. He doesn't know how to throw to a base. And he has that look on his face that when he makes an error, it's like, you know, how did that happen? A guy like that. I can't wait till he's out of here and Herrera's playing second base, because I like Herrera. It's either going to be Herrera or Flores, and we go out and get a shortstop.
Well, the good news about Murphy is that he's entertaining, because you see things in the field that you've never seen before from Murphy. I'll put a positive spin on it. The other day, I couldn't believe that when, for some reason, he decided to cover second base even though nobody was running, and the ball went right through the hole. That was tough to watch.
That's what he does. I mean, he does that all the time. We've seen him not cover a base when he needed to, and see a runner go from first to second because there's nobody there, because Murphy doesn't know if he's a cutoff man or if he's going to back up Duda. He just doesn't know. He doesn't really have any baseball sense. He just, you know, and it was fun because when Omar Minaya was general manager, he had said that when he signed him, he told him, he goes, what position do you play? He says, I hit. He said, well, I got to put you someplace in the field. He says, listen, I hit. I don't care. Put me anywhere. I hit. Well, okay, that's fine, because if you're going to be, you know, making the errors, and mental and physical errors, you better put up a 300 batting average and hit about 40 doubles. And he's got to start doing it. The guys have got to step up during this time of injury. I can't wait to see Plawicki. I think Plawicki is going to be great. I know he can hit. It's going to be a question to handle in this pitching staff. I was shocked that Ron Darling thought that they would bring up Johnny Manel. And I like Johnny. I would rather have Johnny Manel here than Anthony Recca. But he thought, like, well, they'll bring up Manel and they'll have a lefty-righty. I'm like, Johnny Manel is a 4A player. Kevin Plawicki is one of the top prospects in this organization. He's got a chance to do two things. Pick up where Dono left off, which is, you know, asking a lot. but also showing the rest of the Major League Baseball that he's ready to be a Major League catcher. So when Darnold does come back, now you have another trade chip that you could get something back that you need. So this could turn out to be a win-win for the Mets. But I feel very bad for Darnold, because this was a kid who, he was all confused. He went down to see the guru, Wally Backman. Wally sat with him for a couple of hours, worked with him, just spoke to him. I had spoken to Darnold when he had come back. We were out there, they had a bloggers night, and I said, you know, what did Wally do? He said, Wally and Frank Viola, when I got there, I got to the clubhouse, he says, we sat at a table for 2 hours, and they talked to me. He says, we didn't pick up a bat. We didn't pick up a ball. We sat, they talked to me. They explained me. Now, look, think of it like this. Here's Wally Backman. He played in the major leagues for, about 15 years, has a world championship. Frank Viola has a Cy Young Award, a World Series ring. These are two guys who are talking to you, explaining to you what baseball is, Major League Baseball is like, what the life is like. He said he just soaked it all in. And when I saw we had the Queens Baseball Convention this past winter, I was fortunate enough to sit with Wally and talk to him, and I asked him about it. And Wally's a pisser. Wally is funny as all hell. He had his little cocktail, and he's sitting there, and he's like laughing. And I said, oh, it's so funny. He goes, yeah. He goes, Travis is a good kid. He goes, he sat there. He listened to everything we said. He goes, then next thing I know, he says, he's hitting 700 down here. And they took him back. And he goes, and he continued it down there. And he goes, I still call him. And that's Wally. Wally still calls these guys. These guys all grew up with Wally, you know, from Brooklyn all the way to Buffalo to Vegas. And he's still in touch with these guys. And I know there's been this hot rumor that Mike Redman, his job is on the line, because, I mean, the Marlins with the trendy pick, they were the boutique pick to win, you know, to get a wild card. And they look awful. I mean, they're so bad, they're calling a team meeting, you know, seventh, eighth game of the year. Giancarlo Stanton, the star, is saying, he goes, these guys play with no fire. There's no sense of urgency here. So there's a problem there. You get Wally in there. Oh, man. I mean, I'm going to be upset. I'm going to be upset.
Considering Stanton's contract, he's basically a part owner in that team.
Really? I mean, that's why. I mean, first of all, I mean, he's the star of the team. So when he, you know, he's stepping up and saying, listen, the rest of you guys, let's go. Because, you know, they won't trade him yet. They'll wait till they win something, then they'll deal him off. But, you know, if Wally gets to that team, that's going to be a problem for the Mets. And, in a way, I want to see Wally get a job, because he really deserves to get a big league job. But, you know, go to the American League, please. Don't go in the division.
Yeah, American League West. How's that sound,
please.
Right? American League West.
Go to the Rangers. I don't want to swallow 16 times a year, man. I'm telling you. I really don't.
I understand that. I'm with you on that. Now, at this early point in time, what players have impressed you the most? I mean, everybody looks pretty good, but some look better than others. More like impressed you in a surprising way.
Well, I'd have to say offensively, I mean, Lucas mm-hmm. Duda. I mean, yeah. I've watched this guy play from when he was in Brooklyn and when he first came up to the Mets, and, you know, the knock on him was his confidence. He had no confidence. And I think some fans, they don't realize this. The game, all these guys can play baseball. All of them can play. They were stars since they were kids. But the mental part of this game is what's the difference between a guy who makes it in the big leagues and a guy who's, you know, driving the UPS truck. And it has clicked in for Duda. I used to love, Ojeda would talk about this all the time. He goes, there comes a point where it just clicks in. And, you know, it's even like, I mean, I've been in the same job for 30 years, so. But, you know, you start a job and, you know, you want to learn what to do and who to talk to. And then all of a sudden you get the hang of it and it flows. That's what you're seeing with Duda. It's really, it's just, he knows he not only does he know he belongs in the big leagues, he knows he's one of the better players in the big leagues. And that's really helping him. I think Kadiah, when playing out in Colorado and Minnesota, how many times do you really get to see the guy play?
Mm-hmm.
But this guy,
mm-hmm.
he plays extremely hard. He's one of these guys that he's the first guy on the top of that bench, you know, congratulating people. From what Collins is saying, he's big voice in that room, and that's big. And I think that, and you know, he knows just what to say. Opening day, he said he had chills because people were yelling. He goes, I never saw that in a regular season game. The guy knows how to play to the crowd. He's perfect for that. And, you know, he's got to take on a little bigger. Everybody's got to take a little bigger role. And I, you know, I think Duda will be fine. I think Kadaya will be fine. Flores, he's starting to hit. I've always been a Wilmer Flores fan. Listen, he's not a shortstop. We know that. But he was told to play there, and that's where he's playing. And he's been getting a little bit better. He's not going to make spectacular plays. He's just going to make the routine plays. And that's about what all you can ask out of him. I mean, on the pitching side, most of these guys have been, you know, what we thought. I mean, Blevins is going to be – that's going to be tough because he was he was really playing well. And, you know, Blevins,
yeah, he was.
When I look at him, you know, everybody, you know, is talking about the Nationals. This Mike Rizzo, he's got to be one of the worst general managers. How do you give away a guy like Jerry Blevins to the team in your division? I mean, this is a guy, you know, when I look at the Nationals, I mean, they might have more talent than the Mets, but I don't know if they're a better team than the Mets. I don't, you know, Matt Williams is not the greatest manager. This Rizzo, what he did with Strasburg when he didn't, you know, and that pissed Davey Johnson off because Davey Johnson tried to tell him, listen, sometimes you only get one shot and you got to take it. And they didn't do it. And then you see they trade a guy like Jerry Blevins to the Mets, and this guy was the part that we needed, that we were crying about all winter, the lefty to get come in and hit out the tough left-handers, and he was doing it. So that's going to be really a tough loss. Familia has really stepped up. He's embraced this closer role, and I got a feeling we're never going to see Mejia in a Met uniform again. I think that they're so mad at him for what he did. I think that once those 80 games are up, they'll activate him and they'll either trade him or they'll release him. I really think that they're going to send the message that, you know, we're not going to tolerate this anymore. Because here's a guy, there's no more excuse that I didn't know what was in the supplement, because they all have a phone number to call and they tell them what they're about to take. And they speak to someone in the lab and they say, well, wait a minute, before you take it, that has this. Because you're buying stuff in the Dominican Republic. It doesn't have, you know, a nutrition label on it. It's not going to tell you everything that's in that supplement. So to say I didn't know what was in it doesn't fly anymore. And for him to get caught now at a point when this guy, you know, he knows that there were so many injuries. Now Vic Black is going to be out for a while with a herniated disc in his neck. Waiting for Parnell, he knew that he was needed. And to do something like that, that's not going to fly with Sandy Alderson once he's he. And then even if he does come back, if the team does make the postseason, he can't pitch in the postseason. So what good are you? What are you going to take somebody else's spot that's been doing the job for them? I'd be really surprised if they. I mean, you saw Wright was extremely angry over this. So I don't know if Mejia will be welcomed back with open arms in that clubhouse.
Yeah, the comments were, you know, I mean, they didn't completely kill him, but you could tell from the comments they were not as supportive as, you know, teammates usually really, you know, band together. So you could tell from those comments that everybody was not happy.
Oh, I mean, in a time when they're pitching, you know, they see that they're a little short in that pen, and, you know, you're the guy that's closing out these games. We have a nice little, you know, 7-8-9 with Torres, Familia and Mejia, and now you do something like this. It's not like you got hurt. You were stupid, and you're costing your team. And you know that's not going to fly anymore. 2 years ago, nobody would have said anything, but now it's the culture has finally changed. I've been like waiting 5 years for this, and it seems that the culture has finally changed.
Yeah, I do. Again, there's more of a tone of, you know, it's time to win, which I'm totally on board. Now, Steve, you've been around the block a few times, just like I have,
and back
and back and back, and seen a lot of Mets baseball. This particular team, when you look at them, is there any team like you can look at and remind, you know, from the past, do they remind you of anybody where you go, hey, they remind me a little bit of this squad, the way they put together, or that squad?
A little bit of those early 80 teams, you know, the 83, 84 teams, that all of a sudden, you know, young players were coming up. That's when, you know, Dykstra, Mookie, we saw, you know, that's when Doc was coming up, and they made the deal, they got Darling, and now all of a sudden, you know, it was – it was starting to turn. It was starting to say, wait a minute, you know, we might be coming out of the dark ages, because as bad as the last few years have been, the late 90s, early 80s were just really awful for the Mets and for Met fans. And but you're starting to see that young – it's great when you see these young guys who – really, you didn't know what they were going to do, and now all of a sudden they're picking up and they're doing what you're supposed to do in the big leagues. And it kind of has that 83-84 feel to it. I don't, you know, listen, they're not going to continue this winning streak. We know that.
The test
will be when there's a 3-4-5 game losing streak, how the reaction is then. How do they,
right.
You know. And the thing is, when you have Matt Harvey, when you have Jacob DeGrom, those are guys that stop losing streaks. So say if there's like a 3-game losing streak and it's Harvey's day to pitch and he just pitches lights out and they win the game, that's going to be big. That'll be huge. When you have that horse, and we have two of them now, him and DeGrom, and hopefully that Syndergaard, you know, it clicks in on him too when he gets up here, and Steven Matz. I mean, there are guys that are down there. Another kid is this Michael Conforto, who – it looks like by next week he's going to be in Binghamton, because he's tearing up the Florida State League with St. Lucie. You're starting to see it. There's, you know, guys are down there, and we have players. We have something now that, you know, if this would have happened last year where two guys went down like that, the season would have been done. That would have been it. There would have been 4,000 people at Citi Field, and, you know, everybody would be looking, you know, see what the NFL draft was, who the Jets and Giants were going to get. Now the Mets are the story. They're, you know, they're the story. And it's going to be interesting this weekend when they go to Yankee Stadium, because now they're kind of going in as the favorite, not the underdog. So it'll be interesting there. But the tide has really turned. I mean, this is a team that knows that they. I mean, they said it all spring, and we all said, you know, all right, you got to, you know, you talked about it. Let's see what happens. And now we're starting to see it early. I mean, you don't want to go too far overboard about this start, but you know, sometimes you get off to a really hot start, and it'll last you throughout the season.
Yeah, you mentioned 84 and 83 and 84. And 84 is, I think, a nice, you know, comp for this team. That team got off well and was in the hunt, you know, the whole way. And they just really, you know, there wasn't a complete team yet. You know, we didn't have Carter yet. You know, Kelvin Chapman was still one of the guys on the team. So it wasn't quite, you know, it wasn't a finished product yet, but it was a good team, you know. It was a good team. I think it won, you know, over 90 games, and the pitching, you know, Doc showed up in 84, and Darling was there already, and that's what you started to see. You know, you had the dominant pitching, and when you start to get that rotation, you know, when people talk about those 80s teams, you know, it's easy to make it into, you know, Hernandez and Strawberry and Carter, great players. But the thing that I always would think about back then when I was going to the games was, you know, every day you had a starting pitcher going where you felt he was usually better than the other guy's starting pitcher. And that's how you win baseball games. And I think that's what you're starting to see today. You know, I was looking at those matchups. Vinny and I talked about it at the start of the show. And you know, by the time we won Friday, I was actually expecting the sweep, because I'm like, well, look at these matchups on Saturday and Sunday with the pitchers. Starting pitching is tough to, you know, good starting pitching is hard to beat.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when they win the first two and you're like, oh, we got Cologne and then Harvey. I was like, how the hell are they going to beat us? Especially knowing that the Marlins have terrible pitching. I don't know what happened to Cola yesterday. Cola was like, for three innings, he looked like Cy Young. And next thing you know, he's like 40 pitches into the inning and he's falling apart.
When it went fast.
Yeah, but you know, like, when you look at that 84 team, that's when they, you know, they started to really play very well. I mean, I think I still have somewhere in the house, I have my Cub Busters t-shirt. They used to sell these big white, bright yellow shirts with the Cubs and the line through it, and it said Cub Busters, because the Cubs were the best team in the division. That's how long ago.
Yes,
it was.
They
the Cubs were good.
The Cubs ended up winning the division.
Yeah. I mean, the Cubs, the Cardinals, the Pirates, those were the teams we were chasing back then. And, you know, I'll never forget when they made the trade and got Gary Carter. That was it, because Hernandez was here in 84, and Hernandez didn't want to be here until Hernandez saw the nightlife and saw what goes on in Manhattan during the night, and then he was happy as hell. But then you bring in Gary Carter, and now, I mean, Carter, Hernandez, Darryl Strawberry. You had George Foster for a while, who was, you know, he was a goofball, but he hit home runs. You had a really good team, and again, you had that pitching. And think about that bullpen. You had the two-headed closer with Jesse Orozco and Roger McDowell, you know, the next season over. And those two guys, it's a lefty and righty. It's kind of like what the Yankees are trying to do now with Betances and Miller. But it worked great for the Mets back in 85, 86 especially. But, you know, they had
– No doubt.
Yeah, they had a deep bullpen. You also had how many? We had three guys that pitched over 200 innings that in 84 with Gooden, Terrell, and Darling. So, that's when you started to see. That's when, you know, you would go to Shea and there'd be like a line outside there because everybody wanted to buy. There was no Ticketmaster and, you know, buying stuff online. You had to schlep out to the ballpark that day and get online and buy yourself a ticket to the game, especially when Gooden was pitching. You don't want that was like the way it is like now with Harvey. When it was now with every, you know, with this Harvey Day. Well, we had Seaver Day, we had Gooden Day, we had Kuzman Day. We had a lot of days back in the day.
So, Steve, I'd love to talk to you forever, but we only have an X amount of time on our podcast. Vinny, before I let Steve go, or we let Steve go, did you have anything in particular you wanted to make sure you asked him?
Well, I just want to ask you, first of all, Steve, thanks for joining us. This is a great spot. We really appreciate it. But the question, I got to put you a little bit on the spot. You know, Mike was the Nostradamus. He predicted before we started that our next podcast, the Mets would be in first place. So you got a tough act to follow. I'm going to have to ask you, you know, with this great start, you know, what do you think, where do you think we're going to be when we wake up, I don't know, September 15th? Are we going to be in the race?
Oh, we'll be in the race. We're going to be in the race for the division. Because I'm not impressed by anything I see with the Nationals. I'm not a big fan of Mike Rizzo. I don't think he's a very good general manager. And I don't think Matt Williams is a very good manager. And I just think that, you know, when I look at the schedule, what's coming up, we're going to be playing the Braves. We owe them big time. Then the three games with the Yankees. I mean, the Yankees are not very good. Now we have to go to Miami. And then after Miami, then you're going to have Washington again. So we're really knocking out the division the first couple of months. I mean, the first really tough game I think they're going to have is when they play the Cardinals on the 18th of May. Because you're going to play Washington. That'll be tough. I'm not saying they're not. That'll be tough. You got the Orioles for two, and then Philly and the Cubs. I don't know. I mean, I think the more, especially when you have two guys like Harvey and DeGrom, I mean, they bring so much confidence to the team. I think we're in it. I don't think that this is a fluke. I hope it's not a fluke. And I could see them like being five, maybe four, five, six games out of first place come September.
You there, Steve?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you cut out for a second there.
But no, I think I think you're right. I think that they are going to be in a race, and this is going to be a really, really fun summer. Thank you very much, Steve. Hopefully, we'll get you back on again.
Anytime, fellas. Give me a holler. I love coming on with you guys. It was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Mike, what a great spot.
Yeah, Steve's got that passion. He's lived it. He's an original.
No, and you know what? I agree with what he said. We were talking a little bit about some of the topics even before he came on. You know, we talked about guys like Murphy needing to step up. You know, Steve's a little bit more down on Murphy than I would have thought. But I will say this: it's a small sample size. So I have 13 games. He has looked perhaps as bad at the plate and in the field as he's ever been. He's hitting, you what? I don't know how many times he's hit these kind of golf pop ups to short left field or right field. It's like, you know, he's not even hitting, you know, solid line drives. And we all know that him in the field is an adventure. But I still think, you know, he's not going to bat 150. So we got a hot streak coming in him. And if it comes in these next couple of weeks, hopefully it makes some of these losses of these other guys in the lineup, you know, a little bit easier to take.
I never say anything positive about Murphy in the field because how can you? I am a big believer in his bat. I think that he might have been rushed back a little bit. Remember, he was injured and pretty much missed spring training. I think he's starting to hit the ball a little bit better now, and I think that's good timing, especially with Dono out and Wright out. I'm expecting some hot hitting from Murphy real soon.
Another point that Steve made that I know you agreed with, you know, it's this change in mentality that we've seen. You know, it's funny. There was an indication in November that when Kadiah was signed, that it was the beginning of the win now mentality because they gave up the draft pick and all of that talk. But then a lot of the, you know, everything after that in the offseason up until they picked up Blevins and Torres, everything before that kind of, you know, went in the face of there being any kind of change in attitude, because there still was this talk of we need to hoard prospects and we need to not spend money. And, you know, but now you see it's not just about trading guys like Blevins. Those guys didn't make tons of money. But, you know, the way that they bring up Pilecki, and there's just a change in the, you use the word patience, I guess, that there isn't the same patience level that there was, that there's a little bit more of a sense of urgency. And, you know, I know you're going to agree with me, Mike. I say that's about time. We've been waiting for this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, again, time frames matter. Every year matters as far as I'm concerned. They sell tickets every year. And I am more than ready for this sense of urgency. I've been frustrated in the past by, you know, some of the focus on the future at the expense of the present. Listen, last night, you know, I was in the car on the way home from the game. And, you know, I knew Darno was out. And I don't know what Pilecki's going to do. But, you know, he is a rookie, and this is a tough sport. He's breaking in as a catcher, and he can really fall on his face. That doesn't mean permanently, but he might be not a lot of use right now. Darno wasn't a lot of use, remember, at first. But that's still the move. We know the other guys are, as Steve mentioned, quad A players. And it was so refreshing that I actually felt that would be the move. Because, seriously, a year ago I would have been like, they'll never bring him up, even though he's the guy they should be trying. Because we know, on the other hand, as much as I just went into all the potential negatives for Pilecki, he's a legitimate enough prospect where he might play well. You know, he's not a quad A guy. So you got to go for it sometimes in life, and it's time.
No. Hey, Mike, we have Artie from Brooklyn on the line. Before we want to know how Artie from Brooklyn could possibly have something negative to rant about with the Mets going on right now. So here he is, Artie from Brooklyn. You are on. What do you have to rant about with the 8-in-a-row, 10-3, looking better than anybody could reasonably expect in New York Mets?
Yeah, you know what I'm going to rant about, Vin? You know, how can you complain about 10-3? But here's the thing, all right? We still have a leadoff hitter that has less RBIs than Bartolo Colon. And they were paid him $15 million. I hate this lineup. And I'm sorry. I don't even like the fact that you bring up a guy from the minor leagues and put him in the lineup. What does that say about your backups? How can Campbell Soup be batting sixth when your shortstop, who's supposed to be a shortstop for offense, is batting eighth? How does that make any sense? I don't know. They scored
Campbell
seven runs.
Cleanup
I can't
yesterday.
Complain. I'm sorry?
Campbell batted cleanup yesterday.
I wasn't even paying attention. Did he really?
Yes, he did.
You can't have a lineup with Campbell Soup batting cleanup and then Teddy Green. You can't. And then you can't tell me that you're looking for an offense, you have an offensive shortstop because you like his bat, and batting him eight and still have a minor leaguer. And now you got a record. Okay, fine. He's a backup. But you're going to tell me that Pilecki is going to come up and take record spot. What does that tell you? You can't put him in the starting lineup, but they will. And they'll bat him fifth. I know they're going to bat him fifth. They guarantee. I mean, I understand why Granderson batted lead off at the spot, okay? maybe because of the Nationals and stuff. But here's the thing that kills me. You need run production. You're paying the guy $15 million, and he's sitting there looking for a walk. That's what you did by putting him at the leadoff spot. You diminished him. The guy's – you look at his power – what do you want to call that? The percentage. It's the same as his average. It's like 146. One more thing, okay? I understand I spent $15, $3 for 33. I loved it. Brought 10 kids with me. I sat up in the upper deck, but I didn't see the center field. Not the center fielder. That too. The whole center field. There was no fence. There was nothing. Sell a ticket like that. Who is, can I ask you, who is the architect of City Field?
I can't agree with you more. What section were you in? You what were you out up in the promenade?
531.
I've said that since they built the park. It's incomprehensible to me that you could build a park with as many bad seats as this park has. I mean, you have to work hard to find a good seat. They exist. You got to work hard to find
it. Three hits that I had to ask if it's an out. It was so high up that we couldn't get TV coverage. Come on.
All right, guys. But you were there.
Thanks, Art. That's all. So I got the Artie, look.
So he found something.
He's happy. We can tell he's happy. He knows he's happy with the win. But he's right. As much as we laughed, how is Artie going to find something to complain about? The City Field thing is a stone cold fact. There are so many seats that you cannot see the field, and it's a small stadium. They reduced the seats and they added the number of seats you can't see.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. You know, you really have to. You know, I mean, and so I know when I'm buying seats now, I'm always working the angles of, well, you can't go there, you can't go here, you know, you got to go here. But it sounds like, oh, he didn't work the angles right the other day.
No. Now, he also has another good point about, look, I do think it's pretty funny that a guy like Campbell comes up and bats cleanup. It makes you scratch your head a little bit about lineup construction by Terry. But, you know, his comments about Granderson is interesting because is he valuable to the team leading off and getting on base with the – I don't know. I don't have at the top of my head what his on-base percentage is, but I think it was somewhere in the 360, 370 range. I mean, it was a good, respectable number for, you know, despite the fact that he was batting about 150. But the question is, yes, that's valuable to the team, but – do we need him in the middle of the lineup driving in runs rather than getting on base at the top of the lineup? Normally you would say no, but the fact that, you know, we don't have a lot of guys who drive in runs in the middle of the lineup, does it make you question whether or not even him as a moderately successful leadoff hitter is really serving the team at his highest and best use, Mike?
I like him six. I mean, you know, you have to look at the rest of the lineup and look, they're winning. I'm not going to get too crazed about the lineup, but right. If I was managing the team, I guess I don't think I'm making the lineup because it sounds like everybody but Collins gets to make the lineup. Eric Guerin and, you know, it comes out of computers as ever, but hey, look, they're winning. So maybe they know stuff I don't know.
I don't know. Look, it's 10-3. It's hard to complain. I'm not trying to look for things to complain about, but there are some things that do make you scratch your head a little bit. Hey, Mike, I wanted to go to our Met of the Week before we run out of time, and we mentioned him before. I say our Met of the Week is Alex Torres, and it's not just because of the hat, but that doesn't hurt. I'll tell you this, it doesn't hurt. He stepped up the last two games. I know he didn't get off to a great start the first few days. And even yesterday, he did throw a wild pitch that led in a run. But then he turned around, he struck out. I think it was Yelich that he struck out. He got a save to end the game on Saturday night.
With a strikeout.
with a strikeout with when Blevins and Familia were both unavailable. He stepped up, got the save. We're giving him Met of the Week for that purpose, for what he did the last couple of games, but also because this week coming up, this is going to be a big week for him. If he can step up and be effective, we're playing the Braves. I know there's going to be an Alex Torres versus Freddie Freeman moment. And if he could step up and get through this series, get that Freeman out a couple of times, it'll go a long way again to the same way these winning these four games kind of softened the blow of having David Wright on the DL. You know, him stepping up, getting some big outs, big lefty outs, you know, will soften the loss of Blevins. I think, this is a really big spot for him. Now, the flip side, Mike, if he doesn't do it, you're going to be hearing calls for Levesich. You're going to be hearing calls for, you know, who else can we bring up? Can you convert somebody do you want to bring up Mats as a reliever? You're going to hear some crazy things, which I hope we don't hear. I hope we just hear, hey, look at that guy with the funny hat getting guys out.
But, we didn't need three lefties to begin with. Torres can step up and just be solid. Then we're fine there, right, as far as lefty-righty balance in the pen. And, one other thing I always like to, when possible, help the marketing department out, and I know they always listen, is if they're not already working on Alex Torres bobblehead day, you've got to make that happen. That has to happen, doesn't it?
Oh, my God, route, Mike. But for you to make an Alex Torres bobblehead, you have to invest in more raw materials than you're investing in any other bobblehead. And do we have the payroll flexibility to make an Alex Torres bobblehead? I mean, we got to start talking about financials here. That's a big commitment of dollars for that head.
You're right. You're selling tickets, I guess, as it is. I don't know. I just would love. I'll tell you one thing. They make one, I'm there. I'll tell you that right now, Vin.
I'm getting it. I'll be right online with you. And I will tell you, before we go, the last thing I will say is when we went through past the game used memorabilia stand at Citi Field yesterday, what did my son say to me? He said, we have to stop and see if they have a Torres hat, game used hat.
If they sell those, game used, if they start selling those, that'd pay for the bobbleheads.
They didn't have them yet, but they should. They really should.
Yeah. It all comes together.
All right. Well, that's about all the time we got for this week. I'd like to, of course, thank Steve Keene from the Eddie Crane Pool Society. He was an excellent guest. Yeah, just spectacular. And, of course, Artie from Brooklyn in rare form. So, Mike, but I'll give you one more time. Our next show, which will probably be, there next. Again, we're trying to keep it on schedule when the Mets have off days. So probably going to be Monday the 4th or Thursday the 7th. We'll let you know. Will they still be in first place the first week of May, Mike?
Yes.
Yes. That's what I wanted to hear. Well, thanks, everybody.
No
again.
Issues.
That's it. He's confident. He's confident with that prediction. I love it. I love it. Well, you know what? I got to let you know a little secret, Mike. I'm confident, too. I think they will be, too. I think that this is not going to be a juggernaut, wire-to-wire thing, but I think we're going to be, in the race for the division, not just the wild card, for the foreseeable future. Thanks again to everyone. We will hear you again. We'll be back at you soon again, first week of May. Check back. We'll let you know exactly which night we pick. And let's go Mets, Mike.
Let's go Mets.